Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Toby Sims. This week on the show, we're looking at how stock markets are coping with a barrage of economic news at the moment, some good, some bad. For every report of positive growth here and rising sales there, there's more than a hint of inflationary concern lurking in the background. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Stock markets are climbing the proverbial wall of worry this week. On both sides of the Atlantic, shares are hitting new highs. Even here in the UK, where we are still some way off the FTSE 100's all-time high, the benchmark index is safely above 7,000 again. But investors are being pulled in different directions. While economies are reopening, it's not all plain sailing, as this week's delayed end to restrictions in the UK has shown. And there's a flip side to the good economic news too. The big story in markets continues to be the return of inflation. Joining me to talk over the mixed bag of economic and market news this week is Fidelity Investment Director Tom Stevenson. Welcome, Tom. Before we get into the main developments this week, what's happening in the markets? It all looks pretty positive, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely, Toby. And hi. I mean, we are seeing new highs in stock markets on both sides of the Atlantic, as you say, in the US and Europe. And indeed, we're starting to see some more sort of speculative froth emerging in some of those so-called meme stocks that we talked about earlier in the year. GameStop and the like, and it's not just the level of markets. We're seeing strong flows into investments like ETFs. I read just this week that the amount in equity ETFs has exceeded $9 trillion for the first time, and some of the other asset classes also doing well. Bitcoin looks like it's finding a bit of support at 30,000, and oil back above $70. So all in all, yes, I think, you know, things are looking pretty good in the markets at the moment.
Good. So not a huge amount to worry about there, but what else is going on? I mean, first up, what did you make of that G7 get together in Cornwall?
Yes, I mean, it was, you know, it grabbed all the headlines, didn't it? And you'd expect that with you know, so many of the sort of world's you know, leaders in the UK. But I think, you know, what it showed me is that there are, you know, probably as many differences as there are similarities in that group of seven leading democracies. I mean, there's a bit of division on their views towards China, for example, which is obviously a really important topic. The US President Joe Biden seems, you know, pretty firm on China. I think the Americans see China as a serious strategic threat to them. I think some of the other countries, and the UK included, are a bit more ambivalent, and they see China as very much an opportunity, and they don't want to get on the wrong side of that argument. I think from the UK perspective, the big story over the weekend was this argument between the UK and the EU around this so-called Northern Ireland protocol. That's been the main domestic story of the weekend get together, and I think, you know, it shows that Brexit is coming up. Brexit is kind of hidden behind the pandemic for the last 6 months, but I think that's going to come to the fore again in the second half of the year. But I mean, overall, lots of good words, as you always get at these summits. Less real detail on the key issues, things like climate change and the sharing of vaccines.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, I mean, that's been what's been grabbing the headlines. But I think from a market perspective, that's probably not the most important story this week. I think most investors are going to be concerned about what the Federal Reserve in the States is going to say. So talk us through the key points here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, inflation is the big market story at the moment. And, you know, that came into focus last week when we had those inflation figures in the US. So the consumer prices index rising by 5% year on year. So that's the highest inflation rate in America since 2008, since before the financial crisis. Now, at the moment, the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is sticking to the line that inflation is a temporary issue, transitory, to use his word, and that it really reflects the low point that we were at a year ago, obviously in the worst point of the pandemic, and you know, just arithmetically, we're going to have an increase in inflation this year. But we've got the Federal Reserve meeting this week, Tuesday and Wednesday, so we're talking on Tuesday, so the meeting starts today and finishes up tomorrow. The focus is really going to be on so-called tapering, how the Federal Reserve starts to unwind this monetary stimulus in the form of bond buying, when they're going to do it and how they're going to do it. The reality is that the bond market, you know, is telling us really the same message that Jerome Powell is telling us, which is that inflation is not a problem. In the spring, we had a big uptick in the yield on 10-year treasuries, went up to 1.75%. It's now back down to 1.45%. So it's eased back a lot. And I think that's a positive. It's telling us that inflation is not really such a problem. And, you know, a lot of the focus is on the labour market and whether there's a shortage of labour. And I think here, too, the messages are mixed. I think that what shortages there are very much in a few, you know, key areas like hospitality. If you look generally across the piece, I don't think we're seeing labour market shortages. I don't think we're going to see wage inflation coming through as too much of a problem in the short term anyway.
Yeah, I suppose one of the really interesting and perhaps alarming things about these inflationary concerns at the moment is it is really, for most of us and for most central bankers, a voyage into the unknown, isn't it? You have to go back more than 40 years, back to the 1970s, for the last time that inflation was a really big problem for the markets. Is it right to look at the 1970s as the comparison for today? Is it still the right comparison to use?
Well, it's the comparison which everyone obviously makes, because you know, that was the last time when inflation really got out of control, and had a big impact on financial markets, as well as, you know, the rest of us, you know, in the real world as well. But I think there are key differences between now and the 1970s, and I think the principal difference is that what triggered the inflation, or one of the things which triggered the inflation in the 1970s, was a supply shock. So it was a massive hike in the oil price, and that impacted businesses because it raised their costs. It impacted individuals because it made a big dent in their purchasing power, in their spending power, and that had a knock-on effect on the economy. So we had this very awkward situation which they called at the time stagflation. So a stagnant economy, but prices rising sharply at the same time. Very difficult economic environment. Now, today it's very different, because what is driving fears about inflation is not a supply shock, but a demand shock. It's because, you know, economies are getting back on their feet and people have got a lot of pent up demand and they're wanting to spend money again. And I think that's a crucial difference, because I think, you know, a positive driver of inflation rather than a negative one. Having said that, I do think that the authorities are clearly taking a big risk with the fiscal spending that they're doing in America, with the way that the Federal Reserve is supporting the government with rock bottom interest rates and very stimulative monetary policy. So I think there are risks, and the danger is that the Fed allows itself to get behind the curve, that it tolerates a little bit more inflation, and a little bit more inflation turns into a lot more inflation. And this, of course, is the main parallel with the 1970s, because that's what happened under the then chair of the Federal Reserve, a guy called Arthur Burns. He was slow to act. Inflation got out of control. And then in the mid 70s and again in the late 70s, it shot up to very painful levels.
Yeah. OK, so a lot for the Fed to be thinking about. Investors are going to be focusing on what they do this week, certainly in the States. I suppose over here in the UK, an equally important story is this delay to the end of COVID restrictions. So Freedom Day, as I believe it was to be known, that's been cancelled. And we'll have to wait until the middle of July to get back to normal, it seems. Now, that's correct, isn't it? It's a little bit hard to keep up, but I think I'm right in saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we heard yesterday was that the 21st of June is not going to be the day when everything gets back to normal. It's going to be at least the 19th of July, so 4 weeks away, maybe even a bit longer. I think what's happened, I think, is that the government finds itself tied by its commitment to being data-led. It's looking at the infection data and making decisions on that basis. It's understandably being cautious. And one of the things that makes it cautious is its desire to make whatever changes it implements irreversible. So it's one way traffic. So I think it's not surprising. No one's at all surprised that it has been delayed, because the infection numbers are rising quite sharply at the moment. Now, of course, certain industries are particularly hard hit by this, and the hospitality and the entertainment businesses in particular are up in arms about this. And you could understand it. You know, I mean, losing a month at any time of year is bad news, but to lose it at this sort of peak spending time when people are out in restaurants and pubs and enjoying themselves is particularly painful for those businesses. I mean, you know, the theatres, so they've been shut. They would have been shut for 16 months by the time, even if we get back to normal in July. Now, does it make a huge difference? You know, a lot of these businesses are not paying rent. The furlough scheme remains in place. It is still supporting them in terms of their wage bill. And, you know, there is a lot of demand out there. So, you know, in 4 weeks' time, people are going to be spending. The recovery is underway. We had those excellent GDP figures last week. The Bank of England forecasting 7.25% growth this year. So I think the outlook is still pretty positive. It's more of a sort of hiccup along the way, more than anything more serious than that.
Yeah. Okay. And finally, Tom, let's look forward to next week. We've got the latest quarterly reshuffle of the FTSE 100. What are we expecting to see here?
Yeah, so you know, we get this reshuffle every quarter, and how it essentially works is that the stock exchange looks at the ranking of companies, and anything that's ranked above 90 in terms of market size, market capitalization, stays in the FTSE 100. But if it's if a company which is in the FTSE 250 finds itself above 90 on the ranking, then it automatically goes in. And likewise, if something falls to below 110 in terms of size, then it automatically drops out of the FTSE 100. So you get a bit of to and fro in all the in the FTSE 100, in the FTSE 250, in the small cap, etc. So what we're going to see next week, when the latest changes are implemented, is that ITV is back in the FTSE 100. It's had a spectacular year, ITV. It fell very sharply at the beginning of the pandemic as advertising fell away and as the ability to make programmes was curtailed by the pandemic. It's bounced back. Advertising has bounced back strongly. It's replacing a company called Renishaw, which is an interesting company, a sort of precision engineering, a great British success story, actually, in export markets. That, unfortunately, is falling out of the FTSE 100. And another change is that Royal Mail comes in, and that's replacing RSA, the old Royal and Sun Alliance insurance company that was sold to a Danish insurer, Tryg. So Royal Mail coming back into the FTSE 100. But, you know, most of the action actually is in the FTSE 250. Some interesting names that people will be familiar with, probably Moonpig, which is a digital card retailer that's coming into the 250, and Trustpilot as well, which is a software company, essentially, allows people to rate websites. So, yeah, a few changes. Does it make a huge amount of difference to investors? Well, at the margin, it does, because some tracker funds, FTSE 100 tracker funds, will naturally invest in companies that are in the FTSE 100. So being promoted means that a certain amount of money will come into those shares, and likewise the ones going out will lose some money as well. So yes, it does make a bit of a difference at the margin.
Okay, brilliant. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. As ever, there's plenty going on in the markets. Thanks for taking us through the main stories, Tom.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.